on and welcome to First Things First. It is Friday. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This gentleman is Nick Wright. We are gearing up for a big weekend and then a nice holiday next week. We will be here. We're very excited about it, but a big show today. Dak Prescott is ready to dominate the Bucs. Pro Bowler Adam Thielen will be joining us live. But we'll start the program
off. My guy Nick Wright, ready to go to the club with the velvet on.
He's got the velvet side.
Okay.
One player.
I'm on the streets in Harlem tonight. Red Rooster might see him.
We start with one player questioning another man's resume. Blasphemous is what I like to say. Let's set the table for that. Steelers will be in New Orleans on Sunday to face the team with the best record in the NFL and the New Orleans Saints. It shouldn't come as a surprise that the Steelers offense will have their hands full with a Saints defense that has been on fire lately, best in the NFL the last 6 weeks. And while Big Ben is generally regarded as one of the top quarterbacks of his generation, one Saints player is singing a different tune. Take a listen.
This offense do well. We know they run it well. We know they got a couple of 1,000-yard receivers. They've got a quarterback who might be going to the Hall of Fame. He's only been sacked 20
times. Is that true?
Roethlisberger? Yeah. So
really?
What did this offense do well?
In this era. You put him at like a top three of this era.
I wouldn't put him at a top three, but I think
top five of this era.
I think he's going to go to the Hall of Fame.
Top five of this era.
Roethlisberger, top five of this era.
You put him at top five of this era.
A couple Super Bowls. He's probably gonna have.
Is that a yes or no?
Yes.
You put, so you have, who do you be your top five? Drew.
Tom.
Aaron.
Aaron, who's got less Super Bowls than Roethlisberger, but let's keep going.
His numbers are impressive. So you're saying he.
You're saying numbers are impressive?
His numbers are always impressive.
Okay.
Aaron. Okay, so then you put him right there.
Roethlisberger Peyton. Doesn't have decent numbers.
Peyton.
Peyton who?
Manny. He's not.
Well, I didn't even count him in the
this
era.
This is the era. He retired 2 years ago.
Him in the era.
That was most of Roethlisberger's career. You're saying he's better.
Era.
He's better than Philip Rivers right now.
Right now?
Career-wise? You give him the Super Bowl nod. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, he didn't have a
so you're putting
a more accomplished career than Philip Rivers?
You're putting him at number five.
Yeah, I put him at five.
Okay. I mean, so, okay. I'd honestly put Eli before I put Ben, but
what?
Okay.
What?
Two Super Bowls. If we're going by his numbers.
Except Eli washed.
Those are the. I hear you. All right. Cool. So you're putting him at number five.
It is so rare that you see that kind of engagement with a player who just wants to have a conversation
Cam
with
Jordan
you.
Makes a list. He been watching.
Cam took a break from playing to jump on Nick's corner, made himself a little list, and a bunch of people were all about it. Nick, what do you make of Cam Jordan's comments about Big Ben?
So I think that he's right in that Big Ben, obviously, if we're going to do this kind of his era ranking, he's not in the top three. He's right there, I think, for most people to have him at five. Those names ahead of him. Brady, Peyton, Rodgers, Breeze in some order or another. And then I think the vast majority of people would have Big Ben right there at five with Philip Rivers and Eli. People would
somewhere
argue about
there,
those
yeah.
two. One has had a much more decorated regular season career. The other's had a much more decorated playoff career because Philip Rivers has been to the AFC Championship game and no further. But I do find it fun when a player, the question wasn't, is Big Ben top five? If you were listening, he was like, you guys are going up against a team that's got great wide receivers, good running game, a Hall of Fame quarterback. And that's where he jumped on it. He was like, oh, is he a Hall of Fame quarterback? Who said he was a Hall of Fame quarterback? So I Cam Jordan knows as much football as anybody playing for, like, he's allowed to have an opinion on it, just like I'm allowed to have an opinion on it. I enjoyed the interaction. I think he is slightly underrating how good Big Ben's been and how long he's been that good, but I loved seeing that from Cam Jordan and seeing him engage like that.
Of course. Cam Jordan, he's a bright guy. I know your dad played with your dad.
Yeah.
All right, stay out the listing business. Number one, the players playing the game today, they don't know that much about the league and the other players, all right? I prove it to Nick all the time. So when players start evaluating, they're not watching enough film on these quarterbacks to be able to give an accurate depiction. Also, I'm in the Hall of Fame. Stay out of predicting who's in the Hall of Fame. Ben is going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Wait, is or isn't?
Is. It's automatic. It's automatic. Like, Eli is the questionable one, mm-hmm. but I can understand Cam. He plays for the Saints. One of the greatest players ever was who? Archie Manning. All right? Who is he? The father of Eli and Peyton Manning. Eli spends a lot of time in New Orleans in the offseason. So it's a little slanted towards his dad and the son. And I know after being in NFL locker rooms and also seeing guys transfer from playing to doing television and commentating, they don't know that much, all right? I ain't trying to call him out, but there's guys year after year, they start to figure out, wow, I didn't know that much. I know my division, I know a little bit of my conference, but league-wide, you have to be very, very careful in making lists like this, Cam Jordan. Keep playing the defense, as you mentioned, that's the number one thing, that list. Number one in the NFL the last 6 weeks. Make a list of quarterbacks you're going to sack all the way to the Super Bowl. That would be the list I prefer to have the players on compared to this one.
So I understand why where your threshold is. The point I'm making is it would be the height of hypocritical if I said I have the right to give my rankings of things. I have the right to say who I think is a Hall of Famer, but Cam Jordan doesn't. Even if, to C's point, it's possible I've watched more Big Ben over the last 8 years than Cam Jordan.
I can guarantee you have. It's impossible for him to watch a quarterback that he's only played against once and he's in a different conference. They're not watching those guys. So these guys that make comments about other guys in the league, they don't know that much about the rest of the league. I tell people that all the time. Be very careful. Just because a guy played doesn't mean that he knows. Now, he was very smart. He's a smart guy. His list and everything he represented, Cross Point. I like that. He explained himself. No, he did some. No, he's a smart guy.
Yeah,
he's got a future in television. But if he wants a long future, listen to me. Don't listen to that guy. Stay out of the listing business.
All right, let's turn our attention to the game. How will the Steelers, if they're going to pull off this upset over the Saints, how are they going to do it?
So Chris and I were talking this morning, and Chris said something kind of just offhandedly. He's like, well, everybody knows at this point how good the Saints defense has been the last month and a half. And Cam Jordan might know, but I don't think the average fan yet totally. I think there's people watching right now that will be shocked to hear this. Over the last 6 weeks, the Saints have the number one defense in football. Over the last 6 weeks, the Saints
number one.
Number one. They've allowed the fewest points. They have forced the most turnovers. In that same time frame, their offense over the last 5 weeks, their offense is bottom five in football. So are they going to follow that path, or are they going to get back to what they were the first 10 weeks of the year, which is a team that was powered by their offense against a Steelers team where I would say their weakness overall is their defense compared to a high-powered offense in Pittsburgh?
The offensive line hadn't played up to Teron Armstead. They've missed him since week number 10. He injured, partially tore his pec. He's been practicing the last couple weeks. We don't know when he's going to come back. When he comes back, though, you're talking about a guy playing left tackle who Pro Football Focus says is the best offensive lineman in the NFL, but he's got a torn pec. And there's a reason why he's not playing. So he'll be limited. The rest of the offensive line, they suffer some injuries internally, so they haven't played the type of football. Pittsburgh's going to put some pressure on them. All right, this offense has not been able to generate enough big plays. They don't have a counterpunch to Michael Thomas. Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram, look at the lack of 20-yard runs that they've had this year. If people don't know that the Saints are led by their defense, they should also know that this running game is not the running game that they had last year, where both of their running backs were voted into the Pro Bowl. So these are different teams, all right? Pittsburgh, with the win last week over New England, coming in with a tremendous amount of momentum and the pressure of trying to get into the playoffs with Baltimore right on their heels. This should be a great football game.
We've talked a lot about how amazing Drew Brees' career has been. You talked about his throwing motion, how he doesn't let the height work against him, how unlikely his story is. But we were talking off the air about the one spot where, no doubt, the fact that Drew Brees, first ballot Hall of Famer, setting all these records, where the height still can really pose a problem, and it's when the protection breaks down. Like that, because of his height, that is an issue for him even more so than all quarterbacks struggle under pressure, but more so for the shorter guys. Explain why that is the case.
Well, for one, a quarterback, especially like Drew Brees, he has great anticipation. So he's used to knowing a guy might get into a certain window. So he's used to throwing into blind spots, but there's no quarterback that's used to being blind. And when you get internal pressure for a guy who is challenged height-wise, 6'1",
maybe-ish,
if he got some Air Jordans on with some insoles in them. So when you get in his face, if he can't look down the field and look into those windows to throw where he has that great anticipation, that's where he begins to get a problem. If you take away Drew Brees' first look, then he begins to have a problem. That's where his height, because internally, the centers and the guards aren't as tall as the tackles. So typically, Drew Brees is looking down the throat of the defense. If he gets internal pressure, his vision is taken to the outside, and you got bigger guys. So it's harder to anticipate because he has to throw over or around bigger guys. So that's the way you can affect Drew Brees, affect him with coverage. But internal pressure, always. Him, Russell Wilson, Baker Mayfield, any guy that is beyond six, that is not taller than 6'3", they will struggle with that internal pressure.
And that's where it makes sense with Big Ben. So many of his signature plays have been under pressure, not only because he's strong enough to not be pulled down, but he can still see over everybody. And so I thought it was just an interesting note we had talked about off the air, that in this game, because both of these teams have excellent pass rushes, both of these teams on the year have been very good about keeping their quarterback upright. Whichever pass rush has more success in this game could be the biggest key on Sunday.
And coming up, we'll compare offenses to see who's going to put up more this weekend. Coming up on the other side, though, the Cowboys try to get back on track. They're facing the Bucs. That's next on First Things First.
Hey guys, we'll get right back to the show, but first I'm here to tell you about 4Hims. Most guys don't do nearly enough for their skin despite all it does for them. Soap and water are just not enough to prevent aging, but 4Hims is here to help. Hims Anti-Aging Kit is a custom prescription cream tailored to your skin that can keep your skin looking youthfully smooth by reducing the appearance of wrinkles and fine lines. It can renew and restore skin by increasing collagen, the protein that keeps your skin firm. It takes seconds to apply, and it's the same treatment celebrities use to keep their faces looking young, except you don't have to visit some fancy dermatologist or pay high prices to get it. No more awkward in-person doctor's office visits, and the products are shipped directly to your door. It's your skin. Do you want to be a face in the crowd or the face in the crowd? Order now and save $20 off your first month of the Hims Anti-Aging Kit. Lock in those looks now and get your first month of anti-aging for $20 off. Go to 4hims.com/firstsc. That's 4hims.com/firstsc. 4hims.com/firstsc.
Back here, First Things First. Yesterday it was announced the Patriots wide receiver Josh Gordon has been suspended indefinitely for violating the terms of his reinstatement under the substance abuse policy. The 27-year-old wideout had been suspended by the NFL for most of the previous four seasons because of multiple drug violations. CC, there are a few NFL players who have the perspective that you have when it comes to substance abuse. What was your reaction to Josh Gordon's latest suspension?
My reaction is fairly normal, the disappointment. But there's Josh Gordon, there's two different things that you should look at. Let's look at the football player, and let's act as if he tore his Achilles yesterday in practice. What will we be talking about today? Man, they got a gaping hole as far as a wide receiver. Tom Brady, I talked to Tom Brady. I was with Mr. Kraft. We went to Israel, and he happened to call Tom, and he put me on the phone. We were on the bus and everything, and I told Tom, man, I'm signing with New England. He's like, man, about time. They keep giving me all these small guys. I keep telling them I want a big guy to be able to throw to. You're like, Chris, please. And we were joking and everything, but that part of Tom has been true. Since Randy Moss has left there, they have not had a receiver who had some type of height. And when you're throwing the ball outside, like he takes advantage in the pump seams and down the middle of the field with Gronk, that's he loves to be able to throw the ball high to a target like that. Hadn't been able to have that on the outside. They haven't had a 1,000-yard receiver in New England, a wide receiver, not tight end, wide receiver in New England since 2007. So right now, they are challenged as far as what they're going to do outside. The rest of their wide receivers, they don't have a number two wide receiver. Because you think, let's Gronk. Gronk is a number one. On any team, say what you want, Gronk is a number one. Edelman, he's not a number two. Edelman is a system guy, slot only. He can't play outside. Philip Dorsett has been a disappointment, not only in Indianapolis, but when they traded for him since he's been in New England. We know Hogan is limited in what he can do, is not great off the bump and run, is not a constant deep threat that Brady would like. Cordarrelle Patterson, he's a special teams player. He's a better tailback
running back, yep,
than he is a wide receiver. So if he had tore his Achilles yesterday in practice, these would be the things I would be concerned about. Tom Brady not playing the best football that we've seen of him, probably the worst football in the last...
Certainly in the last 5 years.
Okay, in the last 5 years, and his wide receiving core depleted. Gronk, not himself. So now they're getting ready to play football in a phone booth.
Right.
Because they don't have no talent. They can't stretch the defense. And if you look at Brady and their ability to be able to blitz him, right now I'm getting after him because I ain't scared of none of the wide receivers. From a human standpoint.
Before you get to that part of it, because I don't want to go back to football. Before, on the football side, just to echo what CeCe's saying, Edelman's 5'10". Hogan might be 6'1". Patterson's the only guy on the team that is legitimately taller than 6'1". And they are more comfortable with him as a running back at this point and as a kick returner. Mm-hmm. They are now so incredibly reliant on Sony Michel's ability to run the football. And we've seen him already since he was drafted deal with three separate injuries. And so they with Gronk, it does not look to me like Gronk is saving something for the end of the year.
No,
it looks like Gronk is running on empty trying to get to the end of the year. So what this does from them from the X's and O's standpoint is This is a huge loss, and it was one that I will say in the days after Josh Gordon was signed, and this will lead you to the human standpoint, see, it seemed like the vast majority of media was like, man, Patriots got over on someone again, got a star wide
or
receiver.
Or if anyone can write that
pick.
Ship, it's going to be.
And we talked about how, like, there is that if Bill Belichick could cure Josh Gordon, he's misusing his resources as a football coach. He should be helping the public. And that this was, I would be surprised if the Patriots didn't have some form of contingency plan, even if they don't have it in personnel, because unfortunately, see, this can't be shocking to anyone. This can't strike anyone as, oh my God, I can't believe this news. It's unfortunate that it's was maybe a little predictable that something like this was going to happen.
To this day, I'm 28 years, 3 months, over 14 million minutes being sober. I was shocked. As much as I deal with, as much I counsel people, I'm involved with people who run a rehab on a daily basis. I'm shocked. I'm shocked of how powerful the disease and addiction is in people's life. When people said, oh, man, people were consumed by the thought that Josh Gordon with his locker next to Tom Brady, that would be enough. Well, let me tell you my first 3 years who I had. I had one of the greatest human beings, Reggie White, talk to me every day. Man, he dropped words of wisdom on me that was beyond, even at that point, my understanding. I didn't even know what kind of man I was dealing with until I got away from there, until my life was ruined almost and I went to Minnesota. And then I realized, wow, I had that available to me, but the addiction, it blinded me. I knew this would be more pressure. I knew that all the eyeballs on New England. I thought it would turn out in a way like this. I'm still shocked because I know the pressure of addiction and what it does to families. And I know the lies that we, as addicts, that we tell those in our innermost close circle that they don't even know us. They think, dude, you can walk with people like this in life and you will not know them. And to be able to let down that team and that organization. That's one reason why I hate team sports. Tom Brady's sitting there going home with his family, getting ready for a game against Buffalo. Now his number one wide receiver can't play because his addiction supersedes anything else. It was more important for Josh to do whatever he did to violate the policy than for him to be able to show up to work. So this is what I'm calling for, the Players Association and Roger Goodell. We got to get rid of the drug testing as far as street drugs and marijuana. Because we're not helping guys. Because right now, even if Josh could go somewhere to get help by the NFL, I would prefer that. Because now he's ostracized. He's away from the team. Like, you think it's getting ready to get better for him now? No, his life is getting ready to get worse. Because he's not going to have the resources to be able to reach out. And the reason why are we still drug testing? Oh, it's we don't have a reason. The collective bargaining agreement right now, the NFL would probably give it to the players, but what are you going to give us on the way back? But it's time now for the league and the players to be able to come together. Marijuana is not something that's going to enhance someone's play. We know just from medical-wise, it's helping millions and millions of people around the world. Now, I'm not trying to say this would help, Josh, but I'm trying to tell you the handful of players that are entrapped and have addiction issues, we see it. Now, where are they? They flunked the test. They're out the league. Are we helping them? No, we're not helping them. So, for me, it's very, very disappointing. It's disappointing that Josh, it's disappointing that Oakland, the wide receiver
Martavis
in Oakland,
Bryant.
Martavius, because someone is... It's going to be a lot like myself, and they want help and going to do it right. These guys haven't been able to do it. They still need help. I wish there's some kind of way we as the league, we as a group of a fraternity of brothers that play this brutal game, I wish we could help them. But now that he's with now that he's outside the team, I don't think we're going to be able to help him. But this is addiction at its best. The guy had everything in the world. I'm dressing next to Tom Brady. Man, Tom Brady, if Tom Brady wins another Super Bowl, Tom Brady's getting ready. We could walk off in the sunset with him, like, and he still can't get it right. It lets you know the power and what addiction, how it destroys families, associations, businesses, and teams. This hurt the New England Patriots.
Well, I mean, it's hard to add much to that. But what I will say is I know there has been, because we treat different addictions different ways. And if this, we have seemingly a lot of empathy right now in this country for opiate addiction, right? And not nearly as much empathy for someone that might be a crack cocaine addict, which was, I know, what you struggled with most notably. And I think the most important key is that it is all fruit of the same poisonous tree. And it's not that I do have enormous empathy for Josh Gordon. I know people are going to say, oh, he blew it. He wasted it. This is, he's going to, fine. But it is so clearly something he cannot control. And my only hope would be, you mentioned when he signed, you said, I hope he is or someone is the next Chris Carter. At this point, the best hope for Josh is that he could be the next Ryan Leaf, a guy that does hit bottom, finds his way to the other side.
In the realm of football.
Well, not in the realm of football playing, but then uses his experience to try to help and counsel and teach other people.
One of the biggest problems with Josh is, and people have enabled him, people did not help him, because football was always the carrot, all right? And it should have been about life. But when I went through my rehab stint, it was about trying to get my life together and trying to have the tools that you can be successful. And it's hard as hell. You think he meant to get up and do that? You think he meant to let those people down? That's the ongoing saga with addiction, is all we do is let people down. All we do is break our promises, and that's how strong it is. And the kid needs help. He does not need football. He needs help. He needs tools that he can be able to say no. No to those drugs, no to the world, and yes to his opportunities, yes to relationships. That's what's so upsetting about me, is the lack of just understanding. This is what addicts do. They don't show up to work. They lie. They deceive. That's what they do. But addicts need help. Myself, I need help. Josh needs help. And I hope that he's able to continue this long, long battle, because there is no cure. The day you're cured is the day they put you in the ground. That's when you're going to have it all figured out. I don't have this more figured out yet, and I've been in it 28 years. So do I have empathy? Yes, I have empathy for everyone out there, every parent, every mother that sees their son or daughter shooting up. Yes, I have empathy, because I know that there is a way. I do know that it works. And the power to have that in your life, to be able to wake up, to be like, no, I'm not going to be a prisoner. I'm going to control my decision. I'm going to control the things that I do, and I'm going to do something great with my life. That's what Josh needs. He needs to do something great with his life. Forget football. That will pass away. But the decisions and the power to make good decisions on a daily, daily basis, that to me is the key to this. And I just hope that he's able to continue. I hope that he doesn't give up. I hope people don't give up on him. It's a tough situation. And he's put the Patriots in even a tougher situation, because there is no game plan for this. They might lie to us. Oh, yeah, we're going to do – okay. You watch when they go on the field. You know what? They're a less talented football team. The Crafts, Belichick, right now they are scrambling. Because their goal every year is to win a Super Bowl. They're not in the help me business. They got in the help me business because they needed a wide receiver. Now they need they still need a wide receiver as they move forward.
Powerful words. CC, thanks. And we do wish that Josh Gordon gets the help. He needs much more First Things First right after this. Coming up on New Year's Eve, it's the Red Box Bowl kicking off between Oregon and Michigan State at 2:30 Eastern on Fox. And then flip over right here to FS1 as number 17 Utah battles number 22 Northwestern. It's the San Diego County Credit Union Holiday Bowl at 6:30 Eastern, or catch it all on the Fox Sports app. Time now for us to go viral. Syracuse's impressive 9-3 season will conclude with their first bowl game in 5 years. And the team just got even better with three-star defensive end Cooper Dawson committing to play for the Orange with a little help from his close friend on signing day.
I brought Kingsley out here today because he's inspired me a lot through the torn ACL process. He taught me that the only disability is a bad attitude, and if he can come around every day with this big old smile on, I can do it just the same. So without further ado, I told Kingsley I'd announce it to him before I told anyone else. So I'm gonna tell him, and then I'll let him announce to y'all.
Ain't going to Syracuse.
I need one of those on awesome. A t-shirt. Man, the only disability is a
bad attitude.
Oh,
that is
goodness.
Awesome.
That is awesome. I love the fact that this kid, Cooper Dawson, he's able to share the light. Like, he didn't have to do this. We see these kids, man, they do some crazy stuff National Signing Day. Now, this is something that he'll never forget the rest of his life.
And young people, millennials and younger, get a bad rap a lot of times at being a parent of young people. Like, the kids these days are so much better, high school kids, at being inclusive with kids in their schools that have disabilities, even more so than when I was in school. Or like the young people at bringing into the fold, whether it's the kids with autism that they make sure get to spot on the basketball or the football team and have
or
a moment.
Or they go to the dance or the prom.
Something
or
like this. That's
awesome.
Really, really
one
cool.
of the highlights of my youth was I was able to play with a guy named Jerome. He was from my housing project, but I'm the only one who could understand him. He was deaf. And he could only play on my team in the fifth grade. And he ended up being on my team, and then he ended up being a star in high school at the Ohio School for the Deaf as a running back. Great athlete and everything.
Nice.
But I'm the only one who understood him.
So
he taught me a little sign language.
You would translate for him to the team?
Yeah, he knew, give me the ball.
Wow.
Yeah.
Universal sign.
Universal language.
Of course.
What a doofus you
Jerome,
are.
Jerome,
time
you
for
know
some stories to
God.
Start your morning.
Jerome waiting outside my door every morning to play basketball.
Last night, Duke was at the Garden to face Texas Tech, and there was Zion fever in the air. Zion, 17 points, 13 rebounds. After the game, he said playing 41 games at the Garden would, quote, probably be incredible. Nick, what'd you make of Zion's big night in New York?
It was fun to see. It was a good game by Duke. It was close late. But we got to get rid of this scourge in college basketball. Just the thirst of the refs to call these charge fouls. Zion fouled out late on a nonsense charge on a spin move in the lane. You only get 5 fouls already in college basketball, so guys can get in foul trouble with 2 fouls in the first half.
Oh,
it
yeah.
almost ruined the game.
Oh, I have a remedy for you.
What's that?
Learn how to shoot. Learn how to shoot, and you don't have to drive the lane. They're sitting there waiting on him in the lane every single time. There's a reason why you get all these charges, Nick. All right? Because you can't shoot.
This is the new, he's
okay.
the new guy. He's going to be the new can't shoot.
The Knicks did have their president, Steve Mills, there at the game.
Check
the game
out.
Was so popular last night, Jenna, I couldn't get tickets.
Couldn't get tickets.
Called the Knicks.
Get out of here.
Christmas Day, though. I'm there. You're at the Garden.
Okay.
Feet on the wood.
They owe him. They owe him. On to the NBA now. Last night, the Rockets lost to the Heat. But the bigger news, Rockets lost. Chris Paul went down with a left hamstring injury. Remember, last year, he injured his right hamstring in the Western Conference Finals against the Warriors. Nick, how concerned are you about the Rockets now?
Well, they're 0-5 in games that Chris Paul doesn't play. They lost this game after he went out for the game. And so in the short term, you're very concerned because they have no margin of error in the West. In the long term, you're even more concerned because it's now hamstring after hamstring after hamstring. This is the seventh time in his career he's injured a hamstring. He's only got 4 years, $160 million coming to him. This ain't great.
The thing, Jenna, aging in the NBA, the bigger you are, the better you age. Mm-hmm. The smaller you are, the harder the drop-off is. And even talking to Allen Iverson, he talked about when he got older, you lose your explosion, you lose your quickness. Man, you're a man without a game if you lose your quickness. Chris Paul, without his dribbling ability, be able to accelerate in and out of the lane. Oh, this is big problems for Houston. When they signed that deal, they knew there'd be problems. But what they thought was they would have at least one parade.
Yep.
And then they'd be willing to pay that freight going out the rest of his contract.
This is
going to be an ongoing story.
Drew Brees and the Saints host the Steelers on Sunday. The Saints' offense has struggled the last 3 weeks, averaging just under 17 points per game. Before this stretch, the team was scoring 37 points per game. See, what do you expect from Drew Brees in the Saints' office in this one?
Sean Payton's going to try to do some different things. He realizes, especially playing at home against this Pittsburgh team, his defense might not be able to hold them maybe 21, 24 points. So I look for him from a formation standpoint to try to get Pittsburgh in man-to-man to be able to generate some big plays down the field. Outside of Michael Thomas, they have not had a dependable second wide receiver and or a deep threat. So I look for Sean Payton to try to take advantage of the Steelers in that area.
If the Saints can't score at least 27 points in this game, I will start to actually be concerned about their offense. They have so much credibility built in with me that I thought, listen, Ted Ginn's going to come back probably before the playoffs. Teron Armstead's going to come back probably before the playoffs. Like, that they're going to be okay. But if against the Steelers defense, that despite how it played last week, we know is not a great defense, in the perfect conditions in the dome, if they struggle to score again, I will start to be concerned about them, even though they got the best record in football.
All right, Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs, they've got a tough test Sunday. They travel to Seattle. Despite the fact KC is on the road, Vegas still has them as 2.5-point favorites. Mahomes talked about playing in Seattle. Take a listen.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, it's going to be a great challenge. It's going to be a hostile environment. We got to play there in the preseason last year, and you could sense just how crazy and loud it was going to be even in the preseason game. So, you know, with it being like a playoff implication game, it's going to be, I mean, rocking pretty heavily. And so for us, it's going to be a great challenge for us. It's going to kind of give us a challenge that we go out there and try to win a football game against a really good football team.
All right, CeCe, what is Pat Mahomes going to have to do? What's this offense going to have to do to beat Seattle?
Good. I like the fact that he went back to look at that limited time that he had there, because just being there, compared to, there's a lot of times you get in the league, people tell you stories, oh, man, wait till you go to Lambeau Field. Oh, wait till you go to Gillette. But until you've actually been there to feel it, and in the preseason, you do get a little bit of a feel for what the arena's going to be like, what the fan base is like. So that part won't be totally foreign to him. It's about being able to protect and making the simple plays. A lot of times with Pat Mahomes, what we do as shows and people that cover the game, we show all the splash plays, but we don't show all the little hundreds of little smart decisions that he makes. When he gets rushed, when he gets out of pocket, throws the ball away, when he just takes the simple, checks it down to the flat, when a running back picks up a blitz, when a guy breaks a tackle to end up leading to a big run, which they ultimately score. He has done a lot of the little things so right. So in this game, that's what I'm looking for. Because as you get later in the season, the bigger the atmosphere, the more there is the fight in you to try to take over the game compared to being a part of the game. When you go on the road like this, I want him to be a part of the game. I don't want him to take it over. The simple things, even if they're stopped, they have a bad play, get rid of football, take a sack, play the long game, all right? Let the game come to you, because I believe they're going to put a lot of pressure on him. They're going to try to take advantage of those outside edges, and he's going to have the ability, especially early in the game, to be able to calm his teammates down to ultimately try to put them in checkmate in the fourth quarter.
It's going to be very interesting to watch. It'll come out probably around, because this is the night game on Sunday, around 5 p.m. Eastern time, the actives-inactives list for Seattle, because something interesting happened at practice yesterday for Seattle. Both starting safeties didn't practice. One's been dealing with a lingering issue, tendonitis. He got pulled out of last week's game because it flamed up and he aggravated it. The other, it seems like they have more optimism he'll be able to play. But if the plan is to put pressure on Patrick Mahomes, and you might have one, if not two, backup safeties back there, if that pressure doesn't get home, we know what Tyreek Hill can do down the field. And so that is something very important to watch, because Seattle, as good as their season's been, it's a very different style of team. They're 20th in the league in pass defense. They have not been a great pass defense. They miss Earl Thomas, who was their initial starting safety at the beginning of the year. So that I'm going to watch for. But the other key to this game is when Pat Mahomes is on the sideline, and how long is he on the sideline? Is Seattle going to just be able to play keep away by running the ball down the Chiefs' throat? 10 of the last 11 games, Seattle's run for at least 150 yards. I believe, even though the stats say it's not necessarily the case, they say the Chiefs have worse pass defense than run defense. That's wrong. I've watched every game this team has played. This team can do things against the pass because they have a good pass rush.
Yeah, they have special pass rushers.
Right. They've got a couple guys that can cause real problems. Where the Chiefs' biggest weakness is against the run. They have not been able to stop anybody running the football. Seattle and Baltimore are the two best running teams in the league. I bet Seattle looks a lot at what Baltimore did as far as nearly having full success against Kansas City.
Just quickly, Pat Mahomes has already played in New England and in Pittsburgh. How much does that help him play in an environment like Seattle?
It really helps, because those are championship atmospheres against teams that have won championships. So the totality of it matches up. Russell, Pete Carroll, crowd, Pittsburgh, Big Ben, Tomlin, Belichick, Brady, Gillette, fan base, absolutely. Great experience for a young quarterback.
And while you didn't include there, because not championship atmosphere, on the road at night in Denver in that second half comeback, where the crowd similar situation is what you'll see in Seattle.
Yeah, the crowd in Denver's not what it used to be since 2 years ago. They made it at night. They kind of chill.
Oh, okay.
Touché, sir. The Dallas Cowboys get their second crack at clinching the NFC East title when they host the Bucs on Sunday. Ezekiel Elliott has only faced Tampa once in his career, but he rushed for 159 yards in that game back in his rookie season. Zeke's quarterback, Dak, had a good game himself that day. He weighed in yesterday on facing the 5-9 Buccaneers.
Nothing's given and nothing's given in this league and in life. So, I mean, we want to go out there and take it, take what we deserve. And we don't want to be given the playoff spot because other teams lose. We need to go in there and show how dominant we are, and it's about getting this win. And that's really the focus. It's not necessarily anymore about, oh, let's go get this win. We're in the playoffs. Everybody knows it's going to happen. It should have happened whenever, I guess. But I guess we went to last week kind of thinking that and was very humbled. So this week is about going in there and being the best team that we are and that we can be, and making sure we just get a win. And the rest will take care of itself.
They know they squandered an opportunity to do this last week. This week they face a Buccaneers team that really has nothing to play for at this point. But what's the key to Dak and the Cowboys offense being successful against this Tampa Bay team?
The first key is I need to go back to that soundbite right there. Dak, slow down just a little bit. Okay, you can't get all the coach speak in the one interview.
Right, you got to pick your spot.
I mean, my goodness.
Pick your cliche.
I mean, Russell Wilson, that was a little knockoff from Russell Wilson. But slow down just a little bit.
He's got some nervous energy.
I believe that the Cowboys get back to what they were doing. And we can't we have to be realistic with this young football team, one of the youngest in the NFL. Yes, they had one little hiccup in the last 6 weeks. But the style for which they played, I believe that returns at home. Younger players play better at home. Dallas is a tremendous place for a football player to be able to play, to call that home. So I expect them to get back on the winning track. It's going to start. If it starts with me, I'm going to throw the ball. All right? I'm going to go after this defense. I'm going to get Amari Cooper involved in the game, because this is the thing about Dallas. I know what the stats say. If Dak passes the ball less than 30 times, 25 times, they win. If Zeke, let me tell you, since Amari Cooper's been there, this is a different team, different organization when they get him the football. So they're going to be expecting to run Zeke. I'm going with play action. I'm getting Amari Cooper involved in the game early. Nick, you know I want four plays of over 20 yards in the passing game, because that offensive line is not as good. We can't depend on them. But I'll depend on them once I get that defense to fear me, to get Amari Cooper, to get that passing game going, and then I'm going to give him a dose of Zeke and allow him to eat in that second half.
There are three things the Cowboys do very poorly that are keeping them in the tier they are, which is they're a good team, and preventing them from being one of what I would consider a true, legitimate, top-tier Super Bowl contender. We've talked about all of them. One is the explosive plays, the lack of them. The other one is Dak is being sacked at an astronomical rate, 51 times already this year. And the last one is they have the second worst red zone offense in football. In a game like this, home game against the Bucs, getting you ready for the postseason, I want to see at least two of those three, them do much better than they've done.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.